the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right. Hey, welcome, folks. It is time for Bucket Strategy Investing. Back with more of the program, giving you the money information that you need. We hope to help you get through retirement. That's our goal anyway, and I would hope we would succeed. Once again, today, we got Professor Rick Plum standing by with me, Johnny Dean, ready to take your phone calls and your emails. A lot of stuff to talk about, of course. When is there not? Coming up this hour, we're going to be getting into the whole concept of marriage later in life. And no, we're not going to provide marriage counseling here, okay? That's not what we do. Oh, occasionally Professor Plum has told people for financial reasons, it might be better if you get a divorce, but he's not advocating that. All right, we're not really doing that. Although maybe we're going to come from the financial angle, which I guess is what you would expect us to do, right? So you've been married maybe a couple of different times, or maybe just now you found the perfect person and you're 60 years old. Took you all that time. Maybe you got kids from a prior marriage, or your new spouse does, or any one of, I think, probably 100 different scenarios that might crop up. So what do you do to plan and protect yourself financially? We're going to talk about that. Our number here in studio, if you have questions on that, anything else at all, doesn't matter. Show's getting started. Every line is open right now. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. You should take advantage of the opportunity to call the show because you have that right now. You can also send us your emails at wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link. It's right there near the top of the page, and we'll get it here at the studio and answer it right here on the program. Professor Plum, the great and powerful. I wasn't going to do that, and then I left it in. Back again this hour, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, I remind you that your retirement needs are vastly different from anyone else's. Of course, since no two situations are alike, it is important that you have a retirement plan that focuses specifically on your goals as an individual. And with Lucia Capital Group, you have access to an entire network of brain trust advisors all across the country, and they're ready to help you out. You can call them directly if you want, off the air, their number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Pardon me. Schedule an appointment to see where you and your retirement plan stand. Or if you just want to ask a money question, either one. 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, once again, write this down because this is the important one now. 877-PLANNER. PLANNER. So you walk into a marriage at age 55, 50. I don't know what it is. I've known people, Professor Plum, who have said they're going to stay single their entire lives, and they do so right up until the time they don't. And they're probably mid-50s. One was in mid-50s. And the other one was probably almost 60 years old. And they didn't really see any problem with that, except the first thing that cropped up was, well, I've got a house and she's got a house, and now I'm not sure what we're going to do with it. And who's going to own what? And all of a sudden, some issues start cropping up.
Financial issues do come up. How do you go about paying the bills? You're used to paying your way through everything, and so you're used to paying the bills. The individual you're marrying is probably used to paying their bills. How do you start going ahead? Do you create a joint account? Do you? I've seen it done lots of different ways, but this is one of those things where you need to talk. You need to be on the same page.
Well, let's talk for just a second. First of all, there are a number of different ways to go, including debt, which I'll get to in just a little bit. But pensions and new survivorship type issues.
Well, depending upon how much later in life, obviously, if you're retired, you're receiving a pension. You made a choice when you were single. Maybe you took the life-only option. Most pensions don't allow you to go back in and allow for changing your pension to a joint life option at that point. So if you're getting married at 65, 68, 70, where you took your pension at 60, you took the single life because you were what John was talking about, I'm single, I'm never going to get married, or I'm never going to go through marriage again. It was too painful losing somebody or too painful getting rid of them, whichever way it was. I'm just never going to get married. Then you get married again because it happens. The pension may already be set in stone. So now you've got to find a way to potentially look at, okay, what do I need to provide for this individual if something does happen to me? But there's several time horizons we have to deal with when we're starting to set up a financial life. The financial life is first now. What are we going to do about the bills now? What are we going to do about the assets that we have now? You know, John mentioned he has a house, she has a house. Are they going to live in one or the other of those houses, or are they going to sell both of those houses and then move into a new one that is their home? And so what happens? Can they sell the house and get an exclusion? Now that they're married, they're a married couple filing a joint return in many respects, do we still get the home exclusion, the $250,000 capital gain tax-free on the sale of a house? Because this person owned it, and this person owned that one. Mm-hmm. How do we go about doing it? Do we get $500,000? Well, it's all about other issues. So commingling finances, whether it's being the bill-paying aspect, whether it's the assets. And then the other problem is, in some cases, this is not your first marriage at 50, 55 or later, or whatever, getting married later in life. And you have children from a previous marriage. Maybe your new spouse has children from a previous marriage. The assets that you've built up, you'd kind of like them to go to your kids, but if something happens to you. But you also want to take care of your new spouse, and the commingled budget's going to be a lot easier to handle things together while you're both here. But if you die or she dies, that budget that you've created together may not work very well. So there's a lot of questions that need to be put forward and discussed. And the biggest issue is communication. And that's the hardest part. Everything's all rosy. Everything's all fun and games and all, you know, all of a sudden now we got to get back and basically kill the buzz by talking about money.
You got to talk about finance. You got to talk about who gets what, who's getting what after somebody's gone. So now let's say you haven't been married and you've built up, you got a home, maybe you got a vacation home or something. You got assets, you got stocks, you got your own retirement accounts, your 401k, whatever it is. And this all belongs to you, your home, your furniture, and everything like that. Now you get married.
Okay, now it doesn't all belong to you, depending on what it is.
Right.
In many cases, a lot of the assets that you're bringing into the marriage can be kept separate, with the exception of your retirement account, your 401k, things of that nature. As soon as you're married, they are the de facto, your new spouse is the de facto primary beneficiary. Whether you put their name on it or not, if you leave, you know, you leave your kids on it, you leave your family on it, whatever the case may be, they may not get it because the new spouse is going to be the de facto primary beneficiary. The only way to name somebody other than this new spouse as your beneficiary is get them to sign that it's okay. Redo the beneficiary assignment after the date of marriage and have the spouse sign a waiver saying, I understand I'm giving up my rights to this, and they're going to name somebody else as a beneficiary.
And there's a buzzkill, by the way, in many, many respects. Trying to bring
come
that up.
Come home from the honeymoon and slap that paper down?
Exactly. Hey, honey, listen, you know, I know you expected to get this, but I'm going to ask you to sign your rights away.
Now, whether they expected to get it or not, it's not going to be a fun discussion. So that's why these are the things that need to be kind of looked at. How are the bills going to be? I mean, if we've got two equal incomes, it's not as difficult as if you've got one disparate, you know, one high income, one low income, and that low income person is, you know, getting married not just for the love, but also because somebody's going to actually be able to help take care of them. And so what happens if the person who has the high income and the assets wants to give those assets to
somebody else,
their kids or something?
Yeah.
Now, if you're coming into it in the very first marriage, you don't have kids and that what they call baggage, it's a lot easier to integrate the finances because now this person is the only person in your life that really matters compared to having kids and a new spouse.
How do they determine, and I know you're not a lawyer or anything like this, but how do they determine? You come into a marriage, you both come into a marriage, you've each got your own set of stuff that you brought in your wagon or whatever to the marriage. And so the stuff that's in your wagon is pretty much yours to keep. But now all of a sudden you start getting stuff together, and so some of it now belongs to you. I mean,
well, it depends on the titling. It depends on the state you live in. Some states, community property states, everything that's created and purchased basically after the marriage is going to be considered community property. Assets that you bring into the marriage that are treated and commingled, and it may not have both names on it, but you know, you're treating it and you're funding the entire life out of these brokerage accounts and everything else, it can become a quasi-community property. In states that aren't community property, it's a little bit easier to keep them separate. But now we're going to go look at titling. Whose name is on it? We're assuming that if it's all in her name, all in his name, that those are now separate assets of that individual, unless they put it into a joint account. So you have to look at what state you live in. Do you live in a community property state? Many of the western United States are community property, but not all. Oregon, being a main holdout there on the West Coast, Oregon is still a separate property state. So how you deal, and the other side of it is, so you're going to get married, and maybe you move into a different state because that person lived across the border in a different state. Maybe
and now you're going from
you live in Washington State and this wonderful person you found lives in Oregon, right across the Columbia River there, and you decide that you move states, okay? You went from a community to a separate property state, or a separate property to a community property state. These all need to be taken into consideration when commingling households.
Yes, and again, it really has to do with the actual act of marriage, the legal certificate of marriage. And I know that there are people out there who say, you know, I'd love to get married, but why don't we just not get married and we'll each have our, you know, we won't have this legal contract that's going to mess things up. All right, we got to take a break here. 877-PLANNER. Something else I wanted to get into. In fact, I think what we're going to do, Rosie in Atlanta has a couple of questions on the very thing that we're talking about, Professor Plum. And it has to do also with something I wanted to get into, which had to do with debt.
You want to get into debt? That's easy to do.
Oh, listen, I'm sure it's easy to do. If you walk into a marriage in debt and somebody else doesn't have debt, what does that create besides potential problems? So we'll talk about that. Rosie, hang on. Hey, we still have two lines open, 877-PLANNER. Call now with your money questions. Brain Trust is standing by right here on Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. If you go to wealthed.com, our website, you can send us an email right there at the Find Your Answer link. And something else you can do right there, besides the many, many other things at wealthed.com, is to find out where the Brain Trust is going to be. If you're sitting there listening or watching and you're saying, I'd love to meet Professor Plum and anybody else who's associated with the show, any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group and talk about my money, you can do so. Check the different locations, which you'll find at wealthed.com. Wealthed.com. There's a very good chance that wherever you're watching or listening, you'll be able to come see the Brain Trust live and in person. They have a question and answer period right after the big presentation. And Professor, it is on retirement income challenges, strategies, and that kind of thing. Things that people need to think about, specifically strategies to make sure that you don't run out of money before you run out of time.
The presentation is based on retirement income strategies. But the question and open is period is open to whatever financial questions you have.
Exactly. So
you don't have to be at retirement age to get something out of it.
No. Right? In fact, you should be thinking about this. I mean, if you're at retirement age, yeah, that's for you. But you should actually be thinking about this stuff 10, 15 years ahead of time, I would think. So any challenges, questions, comments that you have, you can bring them with you. Again, you go to wealthed.com, our website, and there, that's right where you're going to find where we're going to be, wealthed.com. And oddly enough, all this is free. That's a very cool part. Okay, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. I was going to ask you about debt with regard to coming into marriage, but I'm going to have Rosie in Atlanta ask that because she's been hanging on. She's got a question, I believe, on this very topic. Hello, Rosie.
Hey, you guys. Yes, that is actually, it's crazy. I was watching the show and you started talking about it and I realized, oh my gosh, this actually applies to me.
Well, good. Let's hear your situation. What do you got?
Well, I got married at 40 and my husband is 48 and he has like about $10,000 worth of medical debt. So I'm curious to know whether or not that, if my name is not on any of that and it's not on his accounts, am I responsible for any of that now? And would I be responsible for any of that if anything happens to him?
Well, since it happened before the marriage, it's all in his name. It didn't have anything to do with you. You shouldn't be responsible for it. So don't put your name on any of his cards. Don't refinance anything to pay it off with your name and his name on it. Unless it's just a horrible expense from an interest rate environment. That should be his, and unfortunately, if it happens, it's something happens to him, that should be his, and it should go away at his passing because it's all his debt. So now, debt has a twofold issue when it comes to marriage. One is, whose debt is it, and how are we going to pay this off? How is that going to impact, if I'm the one that's coming into the marriage without the debt, how is that debt going to impact our life together, where a big chunk of their income may be going towards paying down this debt that I had nothing to do with? It happened long before. And so my income is going to be basically funding the entire or much of the marriage. That's one issue. A lot of people don't care for that. In fact, they'll even wait until the other party can get at least close to being out of debt. The other side of it is just more from an emotional. John said we're not going to talk about marriage counseling, but this is going to have to play into that role. why is this person in debt? Now, you mentioned medical debt. There's just no way around that, obviously. It wasn't their choice. It wasn't a financial issue other than, you know, they may not have had really good insurance. But so that one I'm not too worried about. But a lot of times we see people coming into marriages and you've got somebody with a lot of debt, and it basically shows a systemic issue that they have a problem managing money and handling finances. And so how you're going to merge your finances with this person is going to be somewhat delicate, because if you're coming in and you're pretty much a diligent saver, you know how to budget, you take care of things, and opposites attract, right? Maybe, and this person is just, hey, if there's a
is
check.
Is that your situation,
no, hers,
by the
hers
way?
Hers was medical.
I know hers is medical, but I'm saying, are you?
Or his was.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, is this is it where you're more, you know, pay off the debt, Rosie, and this other person is, other than the medical, did they have any other debts coming in, or was that it?
Well, I'm definitely the more financially minded of the two of us, and so, but in this situation, I'm kind of taking the stance that, you know, this is your debt, so this is your responsibility, you pay this off, but obviously that affects, you know, how much income we have, you know,
for other things,
right?
So, for
yeah.
the joint life together.
Right.
I mean, if they're putting a large chunk of their paycheck every week, month, however often they're paid, into that, you know, it does kind of put a crimp on things. But as long as you know about it going
right.
into the marriage before the I do's, then you're ready for it. You have a mental ability to look at it. Unfortunately, a lot of people go into marriage and it's all rosy. Sorry, Rosie, but it's all, you know, joy
I've
and happy.
Never heard that before.
Yeah, first time ever.
And they don't actually look into the deeper issues of finance, because, like we talked about earlier, money is a buzzkill when it comes to a relationship in a lot of cases. And they don't want to ruin that warm feeling that they have with this new person by talking about finances until after they say I do. And then they find out, oh my gosh, this person is a complete freak when it comes to money. They don't have a clue, or they're and all this other thing. So these are that communication that I talked about before. You knew about it. You knew what was happening. You agreed, basically, you know, kind of talking to each other, that it was their debt and it was their responsibility. But in doing so, you also knew that your income was going to be more of the household income,
right,
just because of the way things were going. So it's a communication issue, but you shouldn't be responsible for it if, you know, unfortunately, the Mack truck finds them way too soon.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
All right. Does that help you out, Rosie?
It does. Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care. Thanks for watching and listening. Yeah, I can see it's a concern. And that's something I did want to bring up, too. You have somebody who's, you know, you really would love to get married to this person. And sometimes you don't find out till after the marriage.
But, and that's a problem, because you need to find these
right.
things out
and,
before.
And you find out. In fact, that's something else that some of these millennials are having, because one or both can come into a marriage with $40,000 or more of student loan debt.
The student loan debt is a huge one right now. I have a couple, this isn't marriage later in life, but I have a couple kids that are getting married. One got married last year, two are getting married this year. And they're going through a process, and before they got married last year, they threw everything on the table and said, here's all the assets we have, here's the incomes we have, and they went through and created budgets looking forward and understanding what each other's credit ratings were. They understood what each other's incomes were, how much debt there was or wasn't, you know, and so they knew it. It was very much an open book going into it, so they knew what they were expecting when they did their I do's going forward.
And yeah, but wait till you actually get into it and they start doing it after a few years.
Well, everything changes. It's a work in progress at all times.
That's the thing. It's going to be, and you're going to find out that everybody, here's the other thing, spending priorities. You know, some people are more savers. Rosie was, I think she said she was probably more financially whatever.
Carries the burden heavier. Yeah.
Right, but some want to be savers. The others say, you know, hey, I want to spend. Well, this is how you got into debt in the first place.
and so that's why at least seeing the picture before you buy it, understanding all aspects, not just the fun aspects of the individual that you're dating, but all the aspects of the individual you're dating come into play, because you're buying the whole picture. You're not just, you know, getting the pretty stuff. And so you need to know everything. And it helps. Now, unfortunately, it can also hurt a relationship. But when would you rather have the relationship hurt? Before or after the marriage?
I mean, yeah. That's what I said. Once the documents are signed, once the marriage is recorded in the county recorder's office and it's all there, I mean, you're pretty much, that's it right there. And it's going to take a lot of legal stuff to get out of it.
It is a lot easier merging the households, like you were talking about the people in their 50s that are getting married for the very first time. That's actually a lot easier to merge than the people that are in their 50s getting married for the second or more times, and they have children from previous marriages, and that becomes much more difficult.
There's one more aspect I want to cover on this when we come back that has to do with Social Security and widow's benefits, because those two things do actually go together. That and your phone calls. More lines are open right now. 877-PLANNER. Any questions you have, you give us a call. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, talking with you, at you, to you, for you, about you. You just got to give us a call and ask your money questions. We do have some lines open right now at 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We will get to some emails shortly. If you want to add to the stack, I'll remind you again, it's wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. You go to the Find Your Answer link, and we will read your emails here and answer them, of course, on the program. Now, wrapping up this idea of marriage later in life, and again, there are a ton of ways, and we can't certainly cover all of them. But one of the big ones, I think, Professor Plum, has to do with, and more confusing things, has to do with
Social Security.
And, I mean, you have spousal and ex-spousal, which we can talk about, but maybe more prevalent is the widows slash widower benefits, because the age at which you either get remarried or don't get remarried is
Social Security has a lot to do with the age of when you get remarried, but also has to do with what benefit that you're actually receiving. And so there are different benefits, obviously, from Social Security, disability, retirement, and widow and widower's benefits being the main ones. And so from a ex-spouse or new marriage spouse, what are you entitled to? Well, if everybody's still alive, when you get remarried to somebody, you are tied to that person for benefits at this point. You no longer are eligible for benefits from your ex if you have an ex. Even if you had a qualifying 10-year marriage, you're 68 years old and you get remarried. You've been receiving a spousal benefit since you were 62. You get remarried, the spousal retirement benefit, it has issues with remarriage at any age. That's different, though, than widow or widower's benefit. If you are receiving a widow or widower's benefit and you get remarried, that one doesn't go away. The only reason that one would go away is if the new benefit that you're eligible to because of the new spouse is higher than the current one. So you can maintain. So how you go about looking at your finances, some people will look at it and say, well, unfortunately, I'm a widower, I'm receiving a benefit at 60, 61, 62, and I'm getting remarried. And do I get to continue to receive that? The answer would be yes. I'm not a widow, I'm an ex, and I'm receiving a spousal retirement benefit at 62, 63, 64, and then I get remarried. And so we're looking at our budget, you know, this person's bringing in this much and you're bringing in that much, but that's a spousal benefit? That could go away. It will go away. Because they're different types of benefits.
So let's just be clear. You become, let's say, a wife loses her husband and
she's a widow.
She's now a widow. She is entitled, let's say, to widow's benefits from Social Security.
But widow's benefits are not eligible. You're not eligible for a widow or widower's benefit until you reach age 60. So if you get remarried before age 60, you have not reached an age of eligibility. And if you're not eligible for the benefit when you get remarried, you don't have access to that benefit anymore. So if you get married, and I've seen people get married at 59 and, you know, closer to the 60 mark, and if they would have just waited a couple more months, they would have potentially been able to get a benefit from their late spouse that could have been added into the mix and going forward. But because they got married at 58, 59, that benefit is no longer eligible for as long as this new marriage lasts. And so understanding where the incomes are coming from, understanding what may or may not happen to those incomes once the marriage takes place. Basically, if you get married before the age of 60, then you lose all attachments to the ex or the late spouse's benefits for as long as this new marriage lasts. If you get married after the age of 60, now it depends on whether or not you are eligible for a widow's benefit or a retirement benefit from that individual. The widow's benefit will continue. The retirement benefit will not. Now, what if you get married after age 60 and then the person passes away, your ex passes away. You got married after 60, but you weren't eligible for a widow's benefit when you got remarried. So if the ex dies after the marriage, you're still not eligible for it. But if the ex dies before the new marriage, but after age 60, now you're eligible forever.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Okay, so
it's all about what were you eligible for on the day you got married? If you were eligible for the widow's benefit.
You're talking about married, you're saying remarried.
Remarried, the second time.
Yes, this is the one, and is it because you lost your husband or your spouse, let's say, through death or divorce? Because one...
Well, that dictates, through death, that's a widow issue.
Yes.
Through divorce, if they're still alive, now we're only dealing with a retirement issue, a spousal retirement benefit.
Right.
So we're talking about these two major benefits, the spousal retirement benefit or the widower's benefit. One of them can continue if you get remarried, as long as you were eligible for it before you got remarried. One of them is going to stop regardless of your age when you get remarried.
Okay, you got somebody in their late 50s. Let's call her a woman. She's widowed, and she's thinking about getting married. But she knows, because she's checked into it, that she will be eligible at age 60 for a widow's benefit from her ex-spouse, all right? So we'll say that
her late ex-spouse.
That's what I meant. Her late spouse, yes.
Well, it could be late or late ex.
Okay,
whichever.
But we'll just say her late spouse. She knows she's going to be getting a benefit after age 60. She's 59 and a half, let's say, and she's thinking, there's a guy here, and we're really thinking of getting married. The better choice for her, if she wants to be able to take that widow's benefit and keep it,
yeah,
would be to wait until after age 60, start receiving
the widow's benefit,
and then...
Even use that to pay for the new wedding.
And then get married.
Yes.
And the reason is because she can get married
and
still
continue
collect,
to receive that.
But if she got married at age 59, 59 and a half...
59 and 11 months.
And 11 months.
No access.
And the reason is because she had not started receiving any widow's benefit.
She was not eligible to receive the benefit...
Right.
When she got married. That eligibility issue for widow and widower's benefit is very important. Were you eligible? Not had the person died, and are you waiting to be eligible? Are you actually eligible to start receiving a benefit?
Do you have to be receiving it too?
I mean, believe so.
I would suggest that you probably do. That, you can't be eligible and then get married and then say, I'd like to apply for widow's benefit.
The one that's confusing for me and that I have not gotten a perfect answer on yet is, what if I'm still working? I'm 61, 62 years of age. I'm a widower, and I'm technically not eligible for a benefit because I'm still working. I'm not eligible for any benefit because I'm still working. But I'd like to get remarried, but I'd also like to get the widower's benefit. I'm not eligible. If I get remarried and then later quit, I'm pretty sure I lose my eligibility for that widow's benefit, even though the marriage was after age 60, because I technically wasn't eligible, but I have not gotten a perfect answer on that.
Okay. Well, but suffice to say, if you get remarried as a widow or widower after age 60, you will not be, you could potentially be able to keep your widow's benefit.
If you're receiving it, you're definitely going to be able to keep it.
You're going to be able to keep it. Now, same is not true for now ex-spouses.
No, it's the same is true for ex-spouses. If you had a qualifying marriage, all the rules are the same. If you had a qualifying marriage, got divorced, but then your ex died.
Okay, yeah. Now I'm talking about it for spousal benefits.
Well, spousal benefits are completely, they are different.
Yes.
If you get remarried, or when you get remarried, it doesn't matter when, the spousal benefits that you're collecting from the ex, gone. You're now tied to this new person.
Yes.
So hopefully their benefits are equal to or greater than what you were already receiving. Well, I mean, isn't that why you got married? You get more money? No, I'm kidding. I had somebody tell me once, the first time you get married is for
love.
The second time's for money. And I don't know that, but that's what they told me.
Okay, well, I'll take your word for it. I don't know about that. So just to be clear, on the ex-spouses, you're collecting an ex-spouse's benefit.
Well, everybody's still alive.
Everybody's still alive. You're collecting a benefit. You're 63, 64, whatever it is.
Get remarried.
And you decide, I'm going to get remarried. You now marry a new husband or wife. All of a sudden,
you're tied to that new husband or wife.
And you cannot receive those ex-spouse or spousal benefits anymore from your ex-spouse.
That was severed.
Right. Until such time as that second marriage ends, either in death or divorce.
And then you get to choose whatever benefit suits you best. If it's the ex-spouse's retirement benefit, mm-hmm. if it's the second ex-spouse's retirement spousal benefit, or if it's your own. You get to pick and choose which one's better. That's only assuming that you were at least 62 years of age.
That's why I made them
by the end of 2015. Because if you aren't 62 years of age by the end of 2015, you don't have a choice. You have to take whichever one is higher. You can't let your own grow and do other things.
Well, that's my next question was going to be, do you have to apply for your own first, whether you're full retirement age or not?
If you are, we're talking about the spousal retirement benefit, not widow's benefits.
Yes.
Yes, if you are not 62 by the end of 2015, there's no case where you can choose to take a lower benefit to allow your own benefit to grow.
You take yours first, and then whatever.
Then you look at whatever else is available, and if it's bigger, you can have it, but otherwise, no.
No, so you're taking your own, and if the other one is bigger, you're going to take the difference between that and their benefit. You got all that?
62 by the end of 2015 gave you options.
I know you got questions. You give us a call. 877-PLANNER, our number. Lines are open. 877-752-6637. What is your individual situation? Talk to us about it. Ask us your money questions. We'll answer them for you. We'll tell you which is the best path to take. Live right here, Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean and Professor Plum are coming right back. Come on. Come on. Hey, don't you want to go? You want to visit the Brain Trust? Sure you do. There are different, a bunch of different places you can do so. And if you check wealthed.com, you will find out that on Saturday morning, February 20th, the next 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop will be happening in Las Vegas, Nevada. You can join Professor Rick Plum, Terry Keyes, who was just in here talking about this whole thing. Join them and the Brain Trust, the local Brain Trust advisors, in Las Vegas, Saturday morning, February 20th. Learn all about retirement income strategies. You're going to get all your money questions answered right there in Las Vegas on the 20th. After that, Seattle, Washington, Saturday, February 27th, and then on March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona. So Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three locations where the Brain Trust will be traveling, and there will be more after that. Certainly, you know us well enough to know that. We don't just stop there. Be doing it all throughout March and April. You go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, to sign up. It's all free. Join the professor and the Brain Trust. Meet them, greet them, get your questions answered, and have some fun. All right, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Let's get back to the phones for the top of the hour. We got Janet up next in Fort Worth, Texas. Hello, Janet.
Hello.
Hi, how can we help you today? Turn your radio down if you would, or your TV down if you would, Janet, please.
Okay. No, my question is, I'm 59. I have two ex-spouses, one with Social Security benefits and one with TRS benefits, and both are alive. So I was wondering, you know, what are my possibilities on that?
Now, will you have your own Social Security benefit?
I have my own Social Security, but I have TRS also.
Okay, and two things. How much is your Social Security benefit projected to be?
I don't know that because I don't think I'm old enough to receive that.
Well, you're
yet,
not old enough yet. I was just wondering if you'd seen any projections of what it might be at 62.
I didn't check it yet because okay. I knew I wasn't old enough yet.
And with the TRS, the Texas Retirement System, did you pay into Social Security with that same employment, or are you?
No.
Okay.
No.
So let me ask, how big will your TRS be, pension?
Well, I'm thinking it'll be like $1,500 a month.
Okay, $1,500 a month. You probably will not get much in the way of Social Security from the ex that has Social Security because you're going to be subject to something called the government pension offset. When you have a pension from work where you did not pay into Social Security, the Texas retirement system for teachers, many of the teachers do not pay into Social Security. That means that any benefit you're eligible for from somebody else's work record is going to be reduced by an amount equal to 2/3 of your pension. Your pension's $1,500. That means the first $1,000 that you would be eligible for from Social Security from the ex's benefit will be wiped out. Now, let me ask you, the gentleman that had the Social Security, how long were you married to him?
12 years.
12 years, okay. So you do have a qualifying marriage. Now, if his Social Security benefit is more than $2,000 a month at his full retirement age, you could get a little bit of a benefit, but the most that you're going to get while everybody's alive is maybe $200 to $300 a month, and that assumes he makes a lot of money.
Okay.
Obviously, the ex that has the TRS doesn't have Social Security, and so
Maybe a little bit, not much.
Well, a little bit's not going to cut it because the first $1,000 that you can get from him goes away. And so if he's only got a little bit and you only get half of a little bit, I'm assuming half of a little bit is less than $1,000. So you're not, don't count on anything from him. The only thing you could potentially get there is if your divorce decree split the TRS and gave you part of his Texas retirement there as well. But don't expect much from Social Security from either one of those exes, because the government pension offset's going to pretty much wipe it out unless they have a very high benefit. Now, if the one with the Social Security passes away, then you're going to get more money, because it depends on what his Social Security benefit is, though. Anything over roughly $1,000 you could receive if it's more than your own Social Security. Because, I mean, we don't expect him to die anytime soon, so we're talking about in the future quite a ways.
Future,
and at some point, you're going to apply for your own Social Security, even though it's going to be a reduced benefit because of the windfall elimination provision. Don't expect a lot from Social Security. But the only way to know for sure is to know what your benefit looks like and to know what their benefit looks like. And then we can take a look at it and say, okay, here's what would happen. Here's how much you would get. Here's what you won't get.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome,
Janet. Thank you for the call. Again, well, she was calling because we've been talking before about
exes
and getting married. Now she's 59. She's been married twice, but she's not married now.
She's not married right now.
Right. Okay. So she'll be part of her problem though. Is she's a
it's her pension
getting a pension from the Texas retirement
Texas teachers retirement
the teachers retirement in Texas and they do not pay into the Social Security system, as I understand it.
Not all of them. There's a small subset of Texas municipal workers, state teachers, that do pay into it, and so they would be duly entitled. But because we asked the question, she said no, she did not pay into Social Security when she was a teacher. She will have a pension from work not covered by Social Security, which means she's going to be subject to the windfall elimination provision on her own Social Security, which is going to reduce whatever her benefit shows on the statement. It'll be reduced from there. And she's subject to the government pension offset on any benefit that she would otherwise be eligible for from somebody else's work record.
Yes.
A current spouse, an ex-spouse, a late spouse. All of those have offsets because you're drawing it or potentially drawing it from somebody else's work record. And this government pension offset is going to affect any one of those benefits and all of those benefits. And it affects them the same way. Two-thirds of her pension. That amount wipes out whatever Social Security she'd be eligible for on the other side. So her pension was $1,500 a month. Two-thirds of that is $1,000. So the first $1,000 of Social Security benefit that she's eligible for from anybody else's work record, spousal retirement, widow's benefit, whatever it is, she won't get once she starts receiving her pension.
Yeah, once she starts receiving it, and some people don't get it until age 65. So you have the potential, perhaps at age 62, once you turn age 62, to at least get something out of it.
Right, for the period of time that you're not receiving your pension. And so it's a tricky game, though, because usually you're working, which means the retirement earnings test wipes it out. Then you retire and you get your pension, and the government pension offset wipes it out.
Yeah, so you never know how this is all going to play out.
But if you get the right numbers, we can tell you how it lays out.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe you have questions on this. If you had a job in the state system or some kind of pension where you did not pay into Social Security, and you're wondering if you're eligible for it at all, either from a widow's benefit or ex-spouse or spouse or your own, you can give us a call right here. Lines are open. We've got another hour just ahead. If you want to get in the touch with the Brain Trust off the air, you can do so at Lucia Capital Group. Phone lines are open there. Talk to Professor Plummer, any of the nationwide Brain Trust advisors, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Another hour, I said, is just ahead, and I meant it. when we come back.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.